Clark v. ALG Trustee, Nancy Archbishop, and Andrew S. Falker, Appellant Counsel, Frank Stella, Appellate Counsel.
You may proceed.
May it please the court, my name is Nancy Schlichty, and I am here on behalf of the appellant in this case, Michael Crosby. I intend to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal. This is a case about a foreclosure sale that never should have happened. This case has implications for every person in this commonwealth who owns property and has a loan that is secured by that property. The undisputed facts in this case is that Mr. Crosby owned his property since 1988, that he lived there with his wife and family, and that in 2003 he took out a small loan for $60,000. In 2014, Mr. Crosby was experiencing problems and the house went into foreclosure and it sold on May 29th of 2014. At the time of the foreclosure, the tax assessed value of the house was $436,800. At that point, Mr. Crosby owed $18,313.05, and the house sold at auction for $20,903.77, which was slightly more than the payoff to the lender plus the cost of the foreclosure sale. At the time of that sale, the trustee knew several things. The trustee knew the value of the house. They knew that Mr. Crosby had requested a payoff figure a few days before the sale. And they knew that the successful bidders were actually a collaboration of two entities who regularly bid at foreclosure sales and had, in fact, bid at a sale that trustee conducted the same day earlier that day. Virginia has a somewhat unique non-judicial foreclosure process where sales are conducted by trustees appointed in a deed of trust without prior judicial supervision. And Chapter 55 of the Virginia Code provides some regulatory requirements with respect to advertising and notice, but is an otherwise unregulated system where a homeowner like Mr. Crosby is at the mercy of a foreclosing trustee who is the only person standing between the lender and the borrower and is there to ensure fairness.
May I ask you this? The trial court characterized the legal issue before it as a question of whether there was a negligent cause of action. How does that factor into your argument?
Your Honor, we disagree with that characterization of how it was pled. This case was pled as a breach of fiduciary duty case, with the fiduciary duty arising out of the contract of the deed of trust and the obligations that arise from the deed of trust, the foreclosure statute, and the other duties that this court have recognized consistently since the 1800s.
So in your conceptualization, the breach of fiduciary duty can, of course, include negligence and substandard performance, but it also can include just poor judgment.
Correct, Your Honor. Virginia Code, actually, this court has recognized the special relationship between a trustee and a borrower, and, as I said, since the 1800s, has held that a trustee under a deed of trust owes a fiduciary duty to both the creditor and the borrower, and that includes the duty of impartiality. In the Whitlow case we've cited in our brief, this course talked about the crucial role of a trustee plays in a foreclosure sale, and that is because the trustee is the only one in a foreclosure sale who can actually make sure that the foreclosure sale happens in a proper way. And because that trustee owes a duty to both the borrower and the lender, he or she has a responsibility to make sure that the sale occurs in a fair way. This court has gone on to and has a line of cases where a court has said that a trustee has a duty to maximize the price and to not accept a price that is so low that it shocks the conscience. There's the Dunn case, the Schweitzer case, the Linney case. The code itself recognizes that there are duties beyond the four corners of the language of the deed of trust and says that the trustee shall have the following powers and duties in addition to all others. That's in 55-59.4.
May I ask you this question? It's typically shocked the conscience of the court.
Yes.
So, but is that something that would get in front of a jury, or would the trial court say, well, you know, here's the facts in front of me that you've pled or whatever, and I make that legal determination?
That is generally, that's what the court is charged with doing, but we were here on a demur, and we didn't even get to that point. The point that we got to
right,
was...
demur typically is, hey, you robbed me of my opportunity to get in front of a fact finder, but then if it's a legal determination, then, well, maybe this trial judge said, well, that doesn't shock my conscience implicitly. And then we would say, well, we agree or disagree.
Well, interestingly, there is in the record comments by the court that the conscience was shocked, but that she ruled, and her ruling is essentially that she agreed with the trustee that the duties of the trustee is confined to the four corners of the deed of trust. And the deed of trusts are generally a fairly non-specific document that enumerates the notice requirements, how many times you have to advertise the sale. And so it's our position that the deed of trust and the statute, which recognizes additional duties beyond those specifically enumerated, the fiduciary relationship that is a part of that contract does not is not confined to the four corners.
Well, you can't contract away a essentially statutory or common law obligation.
Correct. There are a myriad of duties that a trustee in foreclosure has that have been recognized by this court previously. There's a duty for the trustee not to bid at a sale, for instance. That's nowhere in the four corners of the deed of trust nor in the statute. There's the affirmative. There's negative duties that are in the cases that this court has adopted.
There's a quip that democracy is like two wolves and a sheep deciding what's for dinner. And if we had the equivalent concept with a deed of trust, then one suspects you'd have a similar type situation.
If as ALG asserts, its only responsibilities are to give proper notice to the borrower and to comply with the advertising requirements, there would be no need for a trustee. A lender could check those boxes.
Well, there'd be no need for a fiduciary duty. You would just have contractual duties, enamored or unidentified as something from a different source, like the common law of fiduciary duties. But to direct your attention, this is an equity action, right? You're seeking an injunction.
Your Honor, this is actually a breach fiduciary. This is a claim for damages.
So you're not seeking any injunctive release at all?
The case... we did initially. The initial case was about injunction and seeking rescission of the sale.
Mm-hmm.
But just prior to the trial in this case, and the record reflects that Mr. Crosby entered into an agreement with the purchaser to purchase the home back.
So all of the injunctive requests that were part of the original complaint, that's been withdrawn.
That's been resolved. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So the question for this court really is there any limit to what a trustee can sell a property for? Can a trustee sell a property for $100? For Mr. Crosby, ALG sold his home for less than 5% of the value of his home, and he lost over $400,000 in equity. Will the court accept ALG's argument that there's no fiduciary duty to Mr. Crosby beyond him giving notice and advertising the sale?
And presumably there would be some evidence about, I mean, because just because you have a tax assessed value doesn't mean that is the value. In that area may have gone up because, you know, it's Charlottesville and it's growing and so on. Conceivably in a soft market, you know, or whatever, it could go down. But there would, I would assume, there would be some, maybe a battle of experts or whatever about what the value was.
That's correct.
The question actually becomes, does the Uniform Trust Code give you a cause of action for damages, or is there a common law cause of action for damages when you have been successful in reacquiring the property?
Your Honor, I believe that that it is a common law cause of action that arises from the fiduciary relationship that comes from the deed of trust.
The trial judge denominated that your claim as a common law breach of contract, and you're clearly identifying it as a common law breach of duty. Is
correct.
That right?
I believe she felt that it was a negligence claim.
Right.
And so, so by virtue of her decision that there were no duties beyond what was stated in the four corners of the deed of trust, that there could not be essentially a breach of fiduciary duty claim.
But the proper nomenclature, though, is fiduciary duties are a historically a feature of chancery practice and equity law as opposed to common law, although we use the term more broadly. But what you mean by it is simply it is a duty the law imposes, however you characterize it.
Correct. That's correct.
Can you parse this out? Maybe you don't understand it. Maybe that's why we're here. But I sure don't understand it. Here's the trial judge's letter opinion. Plaintiff has pled this cause of action under common law negligence claim. I find the trustee's duties are limited to the four corners of the contract, and there is no duty by the trustee under the common law. What do you say that means?
Your Honor, that's why we're here, because I don't believe that to be an accurate statement of the law, and I confess I don't really understand where that came from. I understand her opinion to mean that she believes there's no duties beyond the four corners of the contract, therefore there's no additional duties upon which we could state a claim.
She seemed to have somehow interpreted two circuit court opinions to say if this is a tort negligence claim, you lose. And that seems to be somehow she...
Yes, I believe that she construed our amended complaint to be such, but we very clearly stated in our second amended complaint that the duty arose out of the deed of trust, and it was that duty upon which we were suing, and we stated specifically the previous, basically the failure of the trustee to postpone the sale with all of the knowledge that he had going into the sale.
Well, to give the trial judge the proper respect, her opinion does say, quote, the second amended complaint alleged a breach of fiduciary duty, but did not specify the basis of the duty, end quote. So it appears that part of the reasoning was that a breach of fiduciary duty can only arise when you find a contractual breach or some textual provision of the deed of trust, which is mistaken, as you've pointed out and has been agreed, that that's not an accurate statement of law, but it's a slightly nuanced mistake, you might say.
No, I understand, and I have all the respect for the trial court. I think there was some confusion regarding, I was certainly a bit confused regarding the statement that there is no negligence.
Well, but isn't the real problem with the judge's decision, and of course you have the same respect for the trial court that you do, the problem is she said that all of the duties come from the four corners of the instrument, and that is error.
That's correct, and Your Honor, in deference to the trial court, that deed of trust does reference the statute, so that would be incorporated as well. But as I stated in my brief, the statute actually recognizes that there are duties beyond the enumerated ones that a trustee, as a result of the relationship that is established through that deed of trust.
Okay.
Thank you.
If it pleases the court, I'm Frank Buck, and I represent ALG Trustee. This is a case of first impression for this court. It's gotten somewhat caught up in certain discussions about fairness and equity and things, but this is the first case, reported case, where a debtor who's defaulted in their loan has sued the trustee seeking damages. Now, there are plenty of cases out there where a debtor whose property has been sold for a price that's considered grossly inadequate has gone ahead and filed suit and asked for equitable relief to have the sale set aside. But this is the first case where the trustee is being sued not to set aside the sale, but for damages that the property owner, the debtor who defaulted in the mortgage and took no steps to prevent it from happening,
but,
is asking for damages.
Your point's well taken and I think factually accurate, but fiduciary breach law came out of chancery practice, came out of equity, and then equity evolved, and certainly evolved at the time of our nation, to have equitable cleanup doctrines, which allowed chancery courts to award law-like damages in the event the coercive damages of specific performance and injunctive relief and all the rest, for whatever prudential reasons, were inapplicable. So is this really as much of an outlier concept as you suggest?
I believe it is, Your Honor. Of the counsel for the debtor has cited many cases. Many of them have to do with judicial sales, partitions, and really have no bearing. They have language in there that is supportive of trying to maximize the sales price, but they are not on point.
But I'm sorry to interrupt again, but let me make it more practical. We do have a lot of cases where a breach of fiduciary duty can result in an award of damages outside of this context, right?
Yes.
Okay, so what is the basis of that? And isn't it the basis of the equitable cleanup doctrine? The duty arises in equity. Equity generally does not permit award of damages, but in certain circumstances it does, the cleanup doctrine. Why isn't this case simply an application of that longstanding anchor doctrine?
Well, I think the reason why the court sustained the demurrer is that there is no allegation of what that breach was.
Yeah, the breach is they sold it for 5% of its value, and that's sort of dumb.
Well, it was sold pursuant to the procedures set forth both in the deed of trust and in the statute, which does regulate.
But think about this. Deed of what? Of trust. That means you're putting your trust in somebody else. Who's that? The trustee. Don't you want to trust them to do something that's not really, really, really dumb?
One, we have to look at the situation from the standpoint of the trustee at that time. This is a property where the debtor, in August of 2013, stopped paying his loan, and in April gets a notice saying, you're in default for 9 months. Please pay. If you don't,
well, there's no problem holding the foreclosure proceeding. The question is, suppose one guy shows up and bids $2. Can the trustee say, well, I've sent the notices out. I've got 20 more things on my docket. Okay, $2. You're the only guy here. Could he do that?
Well, I think the answer is yes, could. It would be set aside as being, you know, as being a case where the price was, you know, grossly low, or the amount paid.
Okay, what about
as a practical
matter? What about $20,000, a $436,000 assessed value, and you sell it for $20,000, or in this case, $20,900 something?
Right.
Could that be a grossly inadequate price for purposes of setting aside based upon equity jurisdiction?
It may be.
Well, suppose it were. If it were, wouldn't that a fortiori permit an award of equitable cleanup in the event the injunction is either withdrawn or imprudent, which is, it's obviously imprudent here because she's reacquired the property?
No, because I believe you have to prove a violation of some duty by the trustee.
Well, what about the duty of the fiduciary duty?
Well, what is the fiduciary duty? I mean, that's a nice term. The way they describe it is the fiduciary duty is to be impartial, although there's no allegation in the complaint.
Well, let's stay with it. We've got our finger right on the problem. If this were a pure equity case and she was seeking an injunction and there's a $2 bid that's grossly inadequate, it would be set aside. Let's assume, for the sake of argument, a $20,000 bid on a $436,000 house would also be grossly inadequate, and equity would set it aside. What would be the breach of the duty? It would be the breach of fiduciary duty.
I think that the court, no, I don't think it is. That I think the court has the ability, when it says this is strikes the court as a too far, too little, or whatever, and we're going to use our equitable powers to set it aside.
But when we do that, aren't we saying because you breached the trust, the relationship of trust, based upon a deed of trust, because you were a fiduciary?
I don't believe that's what the cases say. The cases, if you look at them that are cited, they have both gross inadequacy of price plus some violation of some sort of duty.
Well, Whitlow, which actually the trial court has in its opinion, says a trustee under a deed of trust is a fiduciary for both the debtor and the creditor, and in this dual capacity, the trustee must act impartially, respecting these two competing interests.
Correct. And the trustee did. Went through all of the steps required by the statute, required by the deed of trust, which is lengthy. And
well, not only the creditor received any money. I mean, $20,000 was very close to what the creditor needed to be whole, right?
Well, yeah, but the statute, 55-59.4 allows the creditor to submit a closed bid, a written bid, for the amount at any closing, and it can be the sole bid. So typically, the creditor does take the amount of the indebtedness, submit a bid, a written bid that it is of that amount. And that's what happens. So there doesn't even have to be a physical other person there as a bidder.
Right. Well, as Justice Kelsey said, the process is followed. Yes, that's not the question. The question is, accepting that bid, is that impartial, respecting two competing interests, the debtor and the creditor?
I think the answer is no, it's not impartial. It's just simply following the terms of the contract that the parties agreed to.
Why isn't the answer it depends? We need to hear evidence.
Why
isn't the answer is we don't grant a demur, we take evidence? Maybe the excess value was grotesquely inflated. Maybe something happened to the property after the tax assessor looked at it last. Blah, blah, blah. I mean, we're on a demur denial, grant. Am I
we
right?
We are.
All right, then we're not even talking about what the truth is. We're only talking about what could be the truth.
But again, you have to keep going back to this notion. What is the duty? To say it's a fiduciary duty doesn't tell us specifically what is it that the trustee did that was a violation or he did wrong. Now you can say, well, he had to reject that.
He sold it for 5% of its then known value. That's
but what is that based on, Your Honor? Where do you find that?
In the complaint.
Well, but where do you find that in the contract that the parties signed? Where do you find that in the covenant in the common law?
Where do you find
with
the
regard
duty,
to
where do you find
duties?
The duty for the trustee not to buy it himself when nobody shows up?
It's in section 55-59.4 where it specifically states that the trustee cannot bid it in, contrary to what counsel said. The trustee can't bid
in the statute.
It's in the statute, which is incorporated into the deed of trust.
Does the statute not presuppose fiduciary duties by trustees? Doesn't the statute even codify fiduciary duties in a host of topics?
I think the statute does. It sets up a regime where the trustee has to go through certain steps and follow those that gives both the creditor and the debtor an opportunity to either reinstate the debt or pay it off or to have sold the property which was put up as collateral. It's not the purpose of the trustee to choose who should get, as is alleged, that in their brief they argue that it's the duty of the trustee to get the maximum price. Well, what is that price? And where does that duty reside?
That's well, that may be an overstatement, but it's different from 5%.
Well, yes, we're talking about a matter of degree, but where does that duty arise from? If we're going to, and again, I can say that if we're talking about invoking the equitable powers to set it aside, that's fine. But why would this court want to establish, in this case for the first time, that a trustee who follows all of the requirements of the deed of trust and the statute, there's no allegations of any violations, who follows all of those things, can be held liable for doing what he is contractually obligated to do? That is the problem. And that's what really the...
Well, that position takes the position that whoever this trustee is just an accountant. I mean, they just follow the process, and then they take the number that is given them. That's no fiduciary duty. I mean, surely you believe a trustee has some fiduciary duty.
Well, certainly, and the case is indicated, but the statutes are trying to eliminate those things. You can't bid in if you're the trustee. You can't participate. You can't have conflicts of interest. You have an obligation to clear title if there's a question about title. And those are the cases that you find where the court has gone in and set aside.
Mr. Buck, correct me if I'm wrong. You said in response to Justice Kelsey that a sale for $2, where the equity in the case at least appears to be well over $400,000, would be sufficient to set aside. And you're asking, how do you determine what's enough? Don't we do that historically, either with juries or with judgments of judges that say, well, I don't know, but I know when I see it, and 5% is not enough?
Well, again, the case law, which we're dealing with, has had gross inadequacy of price plus some inequitable
where does that statement in case law hearken from?
Well, the
inadequacy of price. Where did it come from?
Well, actually, and again, counsel for Mr. Crosby says in the brief that there's a duty to find the maximum price. If you look back to the earliest cases, and about the earliest one we have reported is Stone case, where what the court was quoting from English cases, saying that the property has to be sold to its best advantage. Didn't say it has to be sold to the best and highest price. What they were getting at is the procedures in the 17th, 18th, and 19th century were kind of ad hoc and ad hominem, depending on who the trustee was. And there was that trend during the 20th century to go ahead and regulate it by the statutes, which they did, which then the lenders, the mortgage companies, have incorporated into their deeds of trust.
Well, you win that point. You're right. There is no duty to sell at the maximum price. The question in this case is, do you have a duty not to sell it for the minimum price?
And I would say that if that were the case, then your remedy is, and I'm not really fighting the battle over whether or not they would be entitled to set aside the sale or vacate the sale. This is an action to say, hey, trustee, although you followed all of the guidelines that are written there and performed them to the T, we're going to hold you liable for damages because we had to go into court and proceed against the creditors. The only time that there's been an action in this sort of case for damages have been lawsuits, which are cited heavily. The Rohrer v. Strickland case and the Lenny versus Wormwill case, where there was damages awarded, but the damages were against the creditor who acted improperly, violated duties, and in which case they did. There was no award against the trustee. All of the cases against trustees have really involved you have to, you know, set aside the sale. This would be the first time, and I think that's what the court was reacting to in this. This would be the first time asking for damages against a trustee.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You have a question?
Yeah, I guess the thing I was going to say is, Mr. Buck, it seems like to me what you're saying is, just because the sale amount was inadequate, and the seal should be set aside doesn't mean the trustee did anything wrong.
Very well put, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let me ask a follow-up question. But would that be an issue that should proceed to a fact-finding hearing? It doesn't mean they did something wrong, but it could mean they did something wrong, and shouldn't that be fleshed out in the trial process?
Your Honor, keep in mind this was the third complaint. I guess it was the second amended complaint. But it's not alleged. There's no allegation other than there was a breach of fiduciary duty. I mean, there was really no allegation. They said they should have postponed the sale. But there is nothing to indicate, and there's nothing alleged about any conflict of interest, duty to quiet the title, any collusion between the trustee.
Which you say are the other indicia that should go along with it, inadequate price plus something else wrong. They did plead they should have stopped the sale. They should have gone back to the drawing board. They pled those things, saying this price does shock the conscience, and so let's have a trial to see if the trustee did something wrong. Why would we cut it off at demur?
Well, then we're using the lawsuit as a fishing expedition to find something. The evidence, not the evidence, but the pleadings, the allegations, the documents included, including the notice of deficiency, notice of sale, and all of those things, all comply with the statute. They didn't allege any wrongdoing.
Hold on right there. I've got the thing in front of me. Let me just recite a few of these things. The trustee has to act impartially between the debtor and the creditor. They didn't. The trustee didn't. Cannot place himself in a position of conflict. He did. Conducted the sale with only a bare minimum of advertising required under the deed of trust. There's something alleged that's wrong. Made no effort to bring bidders to the sale, to conduct a sale which have generated more than a de minimis bid. Something wrong. Breached the fiduciary duty by not canceling or postponing the sale. Something wrong. Inadequacy of price itself is wrong. It's so gross as to shock the conscience. It had a duty to adjourn or postpone the sale. Something wrong. There's all kinds of allegations of something wrong. Why isn't Justice Powell absolutely correct that you have to have evidence to determine whether or not those allegations of wrongdoing amount to a breach of fiduciary duty that could be subject under the cleanup doctrine to an action for damages and not on demur?
Two things, Your Honor. One is, basically, they're saying that the trustee who acted according to the deed of trust with regard to advertising notice and all of those things, that that's not enough, you have to do more. Unless this court's going to set a standard different from what the General Assembly has done, a trustee should feel confident when I do those things according to the deed of trust and the statute, I'm not going to be liable for damages. As far as being impartial, there is no evidence of being partial to one or the other. The argument can be made, well, you went forward or you closed on the sale after it went out for a small amount.
Of course there's no evidence. She didn't get a hearing.
But there are no facts alleged upon which a court could look at that and say, well, what is?
There's facts. Isn't it you got a conflict? Said you had the minimum amount of advertising. You failed to get more bidders. I mean, this is on demur. I mean, you may win the case, ultimately, but why should this be knocked out of the box on demur? And that's what we're here for.
Where is the duty to get more bidders other than advertise it properly? Where is the duty to advertise it more than required by statute?
So your argument is basically, if it's not articulated in the deed of trust and if the statute does not provide for it, there can be no breach of their fiduciary duty. That's your argument.
I would put it, sort of turn that around, that if you comply with the terms of the contract, you can't be liable for fulfilling those terms of the contract, unless it's an illegal contract to start with, which it isn't.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Rebuttal.
Counsel, I can see where there may be unintended consequences if we rule in your favor, because it may be difficult to find people who are willing to serve as trustees if they know that the price of every sale is subject to contest and then to a jury trial.
I would say that should not be a concern of this court for this reason. The relationship that is established by a deed of trust and by the statute is a fiduciary one. As Justice Kelsey pointed out, this is a trustee. This is a person who has discretion. The statute itself describes what the trustee can and can't do, and that includes discretion. And that discretion is what makes it different from a lender. If it were just a checking off of the box of making sure that you comply with paragraph 1, 2, 3, and 4, then a lender could do it themselves. A clerk could do it themselves. An accountant could do it themselves. But this is a position of responsibility. A trustee has a responsibility to a borrower to make sure that they do not lose everything they may have in that property. As the court may recognize, this responsibility is something that affects people's lives. And so what would have been the harm in this case if the trustee had postponed the sale? It's a house where this is tax assessed at $483,000. Even if it is not an appraised value, it's certainly an indication of the value.
Counsel,
the lenders.
I have a question that may answer the question that you just asked us. My question is this. Let's take these facts. You have one bidder. Bidder offers $20,000. The trustee says, you know, that's only 5%. That's less than 5%. I'm going to postpone this sale. Trustee re-advertises it, comes back, there's no bidders. Or maybe one bidder comes and says, I'll offer you $10,000. At that point, does the trustee postpone it again, thereby damaging the lender, the trustor? Or does the trustee say, well, I rolled the dice, now it's only $10,000, and then open himself up for a damages suit from the other side for the delta between potential sale number one and actual sale number two?
Under that instance, a trustee should do some due diligence in order to ascertain why is it that the people are not getting to the sale. Is it because I'm only advertising it twice in the newspaper in two consecutive weeks? Is it because is there something that actually would indicate that there's an environmental problem, something on the property?
How do I analyze? Okay, so let's look at a deed of trust that calls for three advertisements. Still, let's not even look at the minimum. Calls for three advertisements. You're going to look at the deed of trust. You've clearly met the statutory requirement, and you still only have one bidder. How do you analyze? What can a trustee possibly do to determine how many people got actual notice? Do you go out and do some sort of a poll? I mean, what information is available for the trustee to obtain to say, I complied with the statute, I complied with the contract, but I guess maybe I need to put it out on the internet, or maybe I need to hire someone to put up billboards. How can a trustee possibly know the line that has to be crossed in order to not be sued?
Well, in exercising their fiduciary duty, they would need to take those extra steps. And in this instance, for instance, if I had knowledge that there was a house with a tax assessed value of over $400,000 and I only have a bid of $20,000, the end game is not to sell the property. That's just a means to the end. The means to the end of getting a lender paid. And if the lender will ultimately get paid, then that will happen. And the trustee has the duty to go out and find out, why am I not getting more bidders? Why am I only getting one bidder?
How does the trustee do that?
The trustee will investigate whether the tax assessed value is, in fact, up to date. Is there some environmental problem on the property? There's a myriad of ways that a trustee can do an investigation
okay.
prior to an auction.
I've looked over the title work, and I see that the title work from the deed of trust shows that there was an affidavit indicating no environmental problems. I've checked with the treasurer or the commissioner of revenue, and it appears that this was reassessed last year. I can do both of those in 5 minutes. Now, at that point, do I, as trustee, have any further obligation? And how do we give a roadmap to the trustee about how to do that?
Well, Your Honor, I believe it's going to be a factual determination that a trial court would have to determine. If, in fact, that trustee were sued, then they would stay on. I took these additional steps beyond the four corners of the deed of trust in order to try to sell this property for the benefit of the lender, but not to the detriment of the borrower. I did my duty to both of them to make that additional inquiry, to postpone the sale, and to do it again. Because the sale of the property is not really the goal. The goal is to get the lender paid. But in getting the lender paid, you can't do that to the detriment of the borrower for whom you owe a duty.
Now, my next question is this. We're dealing here with a residence. Residences tend to not have a speculative delta to their value, or if they do, it's a very small speculative change that can occur. When you're dealing with raw land, and I'll just use Loudoun County circa 2001 as the example. When you're dealing with raw land, you can have wild swings. As you approach Y2K, you have raw land, planned development, industrial parkland that can skyrocket in value. And then as you have a recession after Y2K, the value can actually go down and has gone down 70, 80, 90% from its high. How does a trustee determine? Well, 70% is enough, but 90% is too much.
I don't believe this court, that we're not asking this court to determine what is the percentage. What this court would ultimately decide that 5% is too little.
I mean, you're saying as a matter of law, 5% is always too little. That's what you were asking this court to say.
Well, what I'm asking this court is to allow us to pursue damages against the trustee who's responsible for my client having to buy his house back from a purchaser who bought his house for $20,000. That's what we're asking this court to do. And I believe this court has recognized that we're able to do that. But I understand your question about the swing. The trustee has to do their job. They have to make that effort to determine what is a value that is reasonable, that is not going to completely shock the conscience. And that
shock the conscience isn't the same thing as, well, we have a reasonable disagreement over the value. I think I should have gotten an extra couple of $1,000s. Shock the conscience is not a very high, or it's rigorous, I guess, to look at it from the other perspective.
It is. And those cases are different than the mere inadequacy of price cases.
I think we've come to the time to conclude this case.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Call the next.